Session number 34006, Reel 1.
What was the origin of your pacifism which led to your conscientious objection?
It's difficult now, sort of retrospectively, completely to identify it. I suppose by nature I've always been a bit of a rebel. But I think probably one of the prime factors was a minister of a church, which my wife went to, a congregational church. I was in the Anglican, but I knew him very well at Sanderstead. And he was a pacifist and made no bones about it. And I suppose looking back, I think probably this, he more than anybody else, caused me to think, you know, carefully, and to see whether I could get any reconciliation between what I was brought up as a Christian to think and believe and what I was now being asked to do, or might be asked to do. And I suppose, well, because I was not very old in those days, but I must have joined the PPU, about 1935, 36 or something like that, I suppose.
Were you an original PES card
member? I think possibly I might have been. I can't honestly remember. Obviously, I was very much influenced by Dick Shepherd, and I suppose that it must have been he, you know, apart from the what was happening at home, which prompted me to sign the card.
In what way did Dick Shepherd influence you? I mean, how did you get to hear right to the paper?
I suppose
the radio,
I must have read or listened to him on the radio or something like that, I suppose. And of course I also, working in the city just before the war, I was in the merchant bank, Robert Fleming's, and in lunch hour I used to go along to Tower Hill and I used to listen to Donald Soper. So I was certainly influenced by Donald Soper as well, without any doubt. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination, I suppose, of Dick Shepherd and Patrick Figgis, who was the minister, who later became president, or what do you call it, the PPU. Mm-hmm. And it was actually Patrick Figgis who put me onto this girl at the Imperial War Museum. She must have got onto him, and then she got onto me as a result of the contact
he
there.
He was chairman or whatever it was after Dick Shepherd
died,
right. Wasn't he?
Well, yes, I think, yes. Did he succeed Stuart Morris, or Stuart Morris come after him? I forget now.
No, I think anyway. He succeeded Stuart Morris.
I think that's right. I think so, yes. Yeah.
When you say you were a member of the PPU, were you just a postcard member, signed the pledge or whatever? Did you actually join a branch? Were you active?
Yes, we did have a branch, I think, in Sanderstead. Yes, we did.
And what did the branch do?
Oh, just talk. I don't think it did anything very much. Although when
talk amongst yourselves? Or
yes, although when the war, in fact, when it broke out in 1939, a bunch of us volunteered as pacifists to go and man the sort of ARP centre in Sanderstead. They were on sort of, we were on shifts sort of with fingers manned all the time. So we offered our services, and I think about a dozen of us used to go and do a sort of a night shift there.
Did you object to the ARP before the war?
No. I mean, I think in those days, one's thinking wasn't. You see, I was never an absolutist. I wasn't prepared to go into the army or do, you know, the pioneer corps stuff, but I mean, I was prepared to work on the land or do anything which is a purely sort of non-military, not necessarily supportive nature, you know.
Was your objection then to killing?
Yes, absolutely.
Did it extend to a political objection to being kicked around by government? Did you object to a war-making government, and for that reason?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, one objected to a war-making government, and as I say, I'd always been a bit of a rebel, so I suppose I'd always been leftish in my political thinking, although I wasn't terribly politically minded in those days. Yes, I don't know. I suppose, like all of us, we were a bit naive about things generally, but I mean, I obviously was, to that extent, prepared to sort of compromise my convictions insofar as I was willing to get ourselves involved in non-passive air raid protection activities and prepare to work on the land, which I eventually did.
So really you had more of a gut reaction than a philosophical reaction?
Yes, I mean it had a religious foundation in those days. I was very much probably more religious than I am now in terms of certainty as to what I believe, you know what I mean. That was, I think, one of the primary things at that time. I could find absolutely no way of reconciling what I thought to be the Christian ethic with anything to do with, you know, blowing up people or shooting them.
So, in fact, you would have, in a philosophical term, subscribed to a policy of non-violent resistance rather than non-resistance.
That's right. That's right. Mm. That's
so, right. How did? What was your feeling towards Nazi Germany, towards fascism, Hitler?
I felt it was an evil. But I thought the war was an even greater evil.
Mm. How would you have proposed to have dealt with fascism or Hitler?
I don't know.
Other than blaming it on Versailles?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. I mean, at that time, I think one began to have to face the possibility that if everybody thought like I did, then there was a possibility that Hitler would come and take us over. And even that I thought to be preferable to the alternative, as I do now with regards to, you know, bombers and, you know, the Russians and all that.
Did you ever discuss this in the PPU meeting, how you would have reacted to any sort of Nazi oppression if it came?
I think it was on an individual basis. You know, if it's the classic thing, you know, what would you do if you saw your German raping your sister? Well, I'd thump him, without any doubt. But I mean, I think it's a bad analogy. I mean, this,
it is.
You know, it doesn't, as far as I'm concerned, I would certainly protect my wife and children against personal aggression. But I mean, I'd just make a distinction, certainly now, and I would then, you know.
Or between defence and attack,
right,
really.
Right,
yes. Yeah. So, you say you're not an absolutist, the whole position doesn't take you any further. So, did you ever see any fascist demonstrations? Did you ever feel moved to go up and shout against them? Aggress in a way that wasn't violent, if you know.
No, I think I can't say I saw any fascist activities. No, I don't remember at all. No, I don't remember at all.
Were you a member of the FLR?
At a later stage, because... yes, I think that both my wife and I became members of the FOR, and I think I mentioned we both went down to the East End of London to Kingsley Hall, which was founded by two remarkable sisters in memory of their brother, Kingsley Lester. And there was Doris Lester and... Anyway, they were sort of founder members of the FOR, and I think that we both joined the FOR at that time. And I suspect I also belonged to the Anglican Pacifist Fellowship, but I can't remember much about that.
What was that?
The Anglican Pacifist Fellowship. Mm-hmm. I think it still exists. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in fact, there's no written in the Church Times this week, I think.
Was that in conflict with the establishment?
Well, what do you mean by the established church?
The established church, yeah.
Well, I suppose it was very much a minority group within the Anglican Church, yes, I suppose so. Yeah. But it still carries on. I'm trying to think who the main... Oh, yes, Charles Raven would be one of the... Canon Raven. I think too that Sybil Thorndyke. Can't tell you about Vera Brittain. I don't think she was particularly.
Vera Brittain, in fact, has written a history of the FOR.
Has she?
Yeah. And I'm trying to think. Is it called? I can't remember what it's called. Something like I Renounce War.
I picked up a book of hers in a recent book sale which I hadn't heard before. Was it called Peace with Honour or something? Name
that's
is that?
One.
Is it? Well, I've got
yeah,
it upstairs.
I don't know if that's the actual one I'm thinking.
I was very much influenced by Vera Brittain. I mean, I read Testament of Youth, when it was published, and I was very moved. And I suppose that may have had some, made some impact on me.
Had your family fought in the First World War?
No.
Your father?
No.
No.
I think they. No, they haven't. No, I don't know. They haven't.
So you had no revulsion against the slaughter of the First War? That didn't affect you at all?
Not really. I've only got this because I was born in 1915, so I was very young during the war. I have got a recollection of being taken down to a bank at Tuckman Park during an air raid, and also being dragged out of bed to see a Zeppelin being shot down over Potter's Bar. But those are sort of very much childhood recollections. I couldn't be among about two or three at the time or so.
No way tied up with any sort of... leftish politics. Do you feel is it a social evil as well as being a Christian evil?
Oh yes. Wasn't particularly politically active. I think I probably read the Join the Left book club, and so I suppose yes, politically I would have been certainly left of centre. My parents were, well, I don't know, they were just ordinary middle class, not terribly highly committed people, but they were very supportive as far as I was concerned.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I had two brothers, and they were both conscientious. I was the oldest of three, but than my middle brother. He was in a bank, and for some extraordinary reason, he was allowed to remain in the bank all through the war. He never moved out of the bank. He was with Barclays Bank from the time he started until the time he retired.
Extraordinary.
My younger brother, he was a bit more of a rebel than I was. In fact, he got imprisoned once for booing the wrong queen, I think, after the war. I think it was when the Queen of Greece was over or something like that. He got mixed up with some kind of argy-bargy, and he got put away for a bit. I don't know whether I particularly influenced them, but I suppose I must have done in some way. I wasn't conscious of the time of heaven.
You joined the PPU office at a time when there was talk of war, but no immediate threat of
it. Yes, I suppose it would be about the time of the Oxford thingy-bob, the Oxford...
A bit later, actually.
A bit later, was it? Mm. That was 30...
Couple of years, 34.
When did the PPU start?
Dick Shepherd wrote, I think it was 36.
Yeah, well, that's about right. That would be it. That would be at the time.
It's about October. Yeah, he wrote his letter to the Times.
Match
the Guardian, then.
Yes.
I can't remember the other people, the three, anyway.
Yes. Just coming back to my memory now, as far as the Anglican pacifist is concerned, I remember I was working in the town, in the city at the time, and every Thursday morning, the girlfriend I had at the time, she was also a pacifist, we both went to a Holy Communion service in the crypt at St. Paul's. Mm. At 7 o'clock or half past 7 in the morning. I remember doing that from, I think, it was about a year or so.
PPU was a secular organisation.
Yeah.
But did you feel a strong sense of Christian commitment going through?
I did at that.
With the other people you met.
Yeah, I suppose the people who I was involved with, the people you know, had this same kind of Christian sort of dimension as well.
Why I ask is that the Quakers were very actively involved in the PPU, and a great many branches met at their meeting houses.
Yes. Well, at that time, we weren't very much involved with the Quakers. We did have some Quaker friends in Saundersteed who we knew quite well. We came rather more closely associated with the Quakers during the war, I suppose, when at one stage, you know, I almost felt that I wanted to leave the church and join the Quakers. But my wife was a hospital almoner, and at one stage in the war, she was working down in Farnham in Surrey while I was working on the land in Sussex, and... she got very friendly with a Quaker family in Farnham, with whom we still had a really good relationship. And she used to go around there to Bath once a week. Whenever I went down for weekends, we used to go to Quaker meetings there. So I've always had a great respect and some affinity for the Quakers. But I love music, and if they only sang hymns or did, you know, choral reading songs and so on, I might have gone before, I don't know.
One Quaker told me that sometime during the war, they had to open their church to all denominations because they were the only church open.
Mm.
They had to sing hymns. She said, we have Quaker meetings in the morning. Just to say, you know, they were letting the hair down, but over the hymns and everything.
Yes.
Why I ask about the Quakers is because they were so involved in all forms of peace propaganda.
Yes.
That it almost goes without saying that the PPU had a strong nucleus of the Quakers.
Yes.
And they were also very involved in the propaganda for peace. Did you in any of your PPU activities get involved in peace propaganda?
Well, I think, remember, we used to sell Peace News, my wife and I, that's all that propaganda.
In what way? To house to house? Or stand
no, we used to stand by the station, down at Polly Oak Station, or we went up at the shops. In fact, that was where I really first met my wife, selling Peace News together. I remember once being attacked by a very angry man with an umbrella, but that's the only form of really sort of physical abuse I got. That was a fair amount of verbal abuse. But that's what I used to do.
Did you find the discussion of Peace News helpful to clarifying your own views?
I suppose so.
Did your views ever trouble you? Did you ever sort of have doubts or questions?
No, I didn't, you see. I mean, I think looking back, it was very much a sort of a black and a white thing, good and evil, you know. There were no shades of grey and white in between. I think the older one gets, the more one realises, you know, you don't always have the choice between good and evil. You've got to choose between, you know, the lesser of evils, you know. So I suppose in those days I was very much more rigorous and uncompromising, shall we say. Although, as I've admitted, I mean, I was prepared to compromise to the extent that I was prepared to do something useful. It didn't involve me actually in bearing arms, you know. Mm.
So it was just an ideal that you
had. I suppose so. Yes, an ideal, that's right. An ideal. Yes.
Unpersuaded by political or any other sort of argument.
Yes. Yes. Well, as I say, but strongly supported by what I thought in those days were my religious convictions.
Mm. You said you were influenced by Patrick Figgis.
Mm.
What about your own church?
Well, the rector, the vicar of the parish that I lived in, he was not a pacifist. He and I were very good friends, and he came, in fact, and supported me when I went to the tribunal to testify to the sincerity of my views and so on, although making quite clear he didn't share them himself, you know. So he didn't really cause any great friction. I think subsequently, after the war, when I came back and for a short time went back into the parish, there was no overt hostility, but I did sense that there were, particularly from families who maybe have lost sons and things, with very certain feelings of really quite wanting not to know me very well.
Yes, that's one of the questions I put on the questionnaire, was the hostility. Your family, you say, yeah, supported you, although they didn't, yeah, agree with you. What about, say, people you worked with?
Well, that's where the crunch came, because my first job after leaving school, not being very brilliantly academic, and having a father who told me when to put his son in, where he was safe, put him into Lloyd's Bank, and I stuck there for about 2 years, and then he had a friend who was secretary of a merchant banker called Robert Fleming, which is a very well-known name, because Ian Fleming was one of the Fleming family, and Peter Fleming was another one, you see. So I went to them in the city, Bishopsgate, and I was there when the war broke out. And at that time, I must have been a pretty militant bloke who was all for sort of proselytising and handing out literature. And I got chucked out on the ear, very summarily. Yes, from Fleming's.
Really?
Because of my sedition. I mean, all the sons and all the rest of it, they were away. And Michael Fleming, I think he'd actually just been killed, actually. So that's where I finished my sort of banking career, anyway. Then thrown out my ear very, very peremptorily. Well, I don't blame them, really, considering I was pretty naughty then, for doing what I was doing. So that was a bit of hostility, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, were you cold-shouldered, actually, in work? I mean, you have to work side by side with...
I wasn't conscious of it at the time. No, I wasn't aware at the time. I seemed to be having I don't remember having sort of heated arguments with people. I suppose to some extent I realised that it was perhaps, you know, not a good thing necessarily to get into a verbal debate with people. I suspect I must have been leaving some literature around, like Peace News or some other things like that, I suppose. I don't know. I've forgotten.
In effect, you were sort of spreading treason and...
Well, that's right. That's right. And then, of course, then I had to think to myself, what the hell am I going to do? And but a school friend of mine, who was very similar to myself in temperament or conviction or this, he had already gone and started to work for this Quaker farm in at Grafham, which is not far from here, Midhurst. And he suggested I should go and join him there. So I went down and saw Mr. Harwood, I think his name was. That's right. And he agreed to take me on, pound a week.
You fixed this before you went to the tribunal?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Did you say which tribunal it was?
Fulham.
Which one? That's
Judge
Fulham
Hargreaves. Local. Judge Hargreaves.
Oh, I've heard of Hargreaves.
Yeah, I think it's quite notorious.
Yes. And what did you get?
Conditional exemption on some grounds that I did get agricultural work, which I was already doing.
You already did. And it was the vicar who came along and supported you?
Yes, and I think Patrick Higgins did too.
He did. Yeah. Did you say anything particular in your statement? You had to submit a statement.
Oh, yes. I can't have no recollection of what I said. You must have been much about the same kind of things I'm saying to you now. No, I never kept it. No. I'm sorry this phone keeps ringing. You'd better understand. My wife runs a community care scheme in the town here, so the phone never stops ringing.
Oh, it doesn't worry me, unless you have to rush
it.
So, in fact, your experience of the tribunal wasn't very alarming.
Yes. No.
I mean, how did you feel? You got up there.
No, I wasn't very happy or relaxed.
No.
If I recollect it, there was Hargreaves, and then there was presumably someone like an employer's representative and a trade union bloke. And if my recollection was that the trade union bloke was more bloody than the employer's bloke.
Funny you should say that. A lot of people say that. They're much more hard and rigid.
Yeah.
How long did the hearing last?
I don't know, I suppose it'd be about half an hour, would it be? I don't know.
They'd read your submission
before? They must have read my submission, and I presume they must have asked me the normal sort of questions, and know what would you do if you're sort of German raping your sister or something. I honestly can't remember what on earth. I think it's one of those things which, you know, you're in a bit of a state and you just don't remember what happened afterward. I don't know, I can't remember. However, I don't seem to recall that there was an awful lot of aggro, or, you know, I got terribly upset about the thing.
Whereas you weren't prepared to be absolute in your objection.
No.
That was presumably Yes,
I mean, looking back now, I'm wondering why I wasn't more an absolutist than I was, you know.
Mm. It surprises me, actually. I mean, not particularly with you, but that if you take that view, that people weren't as strong
that's right.
In their objections.
I suppose we must have been cowards. I don't know. I just don't know. I just felt... I felt strongly, but not sufficiently strongly to prepare to go to the state for it. I don't know.
Mm. Did you? Did your objection also include objection to being conscripted on a political ground in a libertarian sense?
No, I don't think so.
You didn't feel that it was wrong of the state to force you to go to war?
Well, I suppose I did, but I don't think I felt it was the thing I would want to make a particular thing of song and dance about. I don't think so. I don't think so.
No,
I mean, insofar as the state makes you do all sorts of things you don't like, doing that, paying income tax and doing all sorts of other things. I don't know. I don't think it was. Well, I don't think it was a factor which caused me much concern at the time.
Did you ever worry about your taxes, which went towards the war
effort? I think I did. I suppose at some stage or other, this would be something which we as a group would have talked about. But I don't seem to remember doing anything very positive about it. No, I think I was just naive and woolly in those days. And idealistic and never didn't really think terribly hard about some of the practicalities, you know, quite honestly.
Were you prepared? I mean, supposing that it had occasions arisen, even to go to prison. I mean, I know there was actually very little risk if you're going to prison, but you felt strongly enough to
think
the worst that would
happen. Yes, I think so. I think this was something which ultimately one had to face as a possible consequence. I think so. Yes.
Had you read anything about the fate of CS in the First War?
I had read Called a Catchpole. That mean many things didn't mean anything to you. I think I'd read that. And of course, they had a ghastly time during the First World War. The CEOs did go into prison. Yes, I don't think it would be something which I would be looking forward to. But I suppose I must have, in the back of my mind, felt that, ultimately it might be something I'd have to face.
And your parents went along with you, although they didn't agree with you.
Yes, I mean, they didn't seek to dissuade me. I don't think... My mother was a gentle, simple soul, and I don't think she knew what it was all about anyway. My father... I can never recall him actually disagreeing with me. And certainly he was, very supportive, certainly by the time I got chucked out of Fleming's.
Anything I would say is that parents might find it difficult with their contemporaries... I mean, the same thing keeps on going. Contemporaries who had sons in the war and the parents who had sons who were conscientious objectors might have come up to some sort of aggro.
Well, it's possible that my father may have lost some friends as a result of having a delinquent son. Although certainly at the time I wasn't aware of it. In retrospect, I think it is possible. I can think of one particular chap, incidentally, who was the secretary of Robert Fleming's, who used to travel up on the train together each day to the city, and he was instrumental in taking me to Fleming's, so I suspect that relationship broke down once I got slung out of Fleming's. But there was no recrimination on my father's part, and I...
Nothing ever rebounded on
No,
I felt. I mean, obviously, since they supported you, they would have gone along to you, but they might have had some emotional rebuffs from
they might have done.
Their friends
they
and
might
acquaintances.
Have done. If so, I wasn't aware of it.
You have children of your own. Do they feel the same way?
We had three sons. We lost our middle son. Yes. I actually think they probably do. The older son, he's a consultant surgeon. I don't really know quite what his situation would be. My younger son, Malcolm, who's a musician, amongst other things, very, very politically minded to begin with. Less so now, but certainly left of centre, like his dad. I would think, in a crunch he would take the same view and keep on moving. Although he has no religious convictions now, at least he says he hasn't.
This is just from humanitarian, political, whatever reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole host of for not wanting to fight.
They
don't necessarily have to be, just don't want to kill.
No, of course.
So you went down to Grafham immediately?
I would think within 6 weeks, if I recall. I think this tribunal thing. No, anyway, I think I got slung out of Fleming's probably be about April or May in 1940, really, isn't it? That's right. And I think I started the Grafham in the beginning of July or the end of June. I think so. And got married in September.
So, where was your wife all this time then?
She was.
She comes to Grafham too?
No, she was a hospital almoner and. She was working at Farnham, so we weren't too far distant, so
I used to go down to Farnham at weekends.
So you only worked on what, Monday to Friday then?
Yeah. Yeah.
And did they put you up? Did you
see
them? What sort of accommodation did you have?
We had a stable until it got too rat infested. Mm. Then we had a tent.
All through the winter?
Well, actually, we're never there through the winter, actually, because I think we moved out. Oh, yes, it must have been. It must have been. Times. So hazy about times and distances, man. Perhaps my time scale is wrong. I don't recall being there in the winter, but now I'm wondering whether I was or wasn't. I think it seems to me unlikely now. I think I must have gone there earlier in the year than I thought. I was certainly there for the best part of a year or 9 months, I think, before I then... my friend, he'd left the farm and he'd joined the Sussex War Agricultural Committee, and then he transferred to Surrey. So I went to Surrey because that meant I could live with my parents at home. We both lived with my parents at home in Somerset, that's right. And I think that must have been towards the end of... must have been towards the end of 1940, I guess it was. But I don't seem to remember spending a winter in a tent or a stable.
Farmer at Grafham, mm-hmm. He was a Quaker. Was he actually on a scheme for the conscientious?
No.
It was just your own arrangement.
That's right.
What sort of work did you do there?
Well, everything. It was incredible. Looking back on it, you know, there was a lot of pleasure in it. I mean, I learnt to plough, I learnt to milk cows, I learnt to thatch ricks. I wasn't really good, but I knew the basics before I lived there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you transferred to Surrey because it was more convenient.
Yes. I think probably too, they're going to get a bit more money, I suspect, too.
Did you have to report to the tribunal before being transferred?
Not to Surrey, but when subsequently Patrick Figures asked my wife and I whether we'd go to Bow, that necessity of going back to the tribunal and getting the exemption order changed, social work.
Did you have to come before again with a further statement? You had
same
bloke,
same bloke.
Was it the same procedure?
Hargreaves again at Fulham.
Really?
By that time, I'd already gone to Kingsley Hall. And one thing I can remember about this, that Patrick came with me, Patrick Figures came again as prisoner's friend, and the thing was scheduled for, I don't know, 10:30 or something like that, and for some reason or other, he wanted to buy an axe. And I can't think why he wanted to buy an axe, but he wanted to buy an axe, and we got this axe, and as a consequence, we were late, or just about... they were just about calling my name when we went in, and I rushed down brandishing this axe. I was pounced upon by all sorts of people, you know. Oh, dear. That took a bit of explaining. Mm. But there was no problem. I think they asked me what silly questions again, but they varied the exemption order.
What did you actually do in there?
Well, a bit of everything. It was a settlement. It sort of looked after people in the cradle of the grave. There were youth clubs and women's meetings and discussion groups, and we did a lot of work taking cocoa down into the shelters and running sort of discussion groups down the shelters. I started a musical appreciation class, and we had to do some fire watching.
When the fire watching came, did you register or did you object to that too?
Can't remember. I don't know whether we registered individually. I suppose we were compelled as a building to have some sort of fire watching arrangements, and I presume that we
individuals were supposed to register. It was compulsory as fire watchers, and some conscientious objectors objected to that.
I've no recollection of registering as a fire watcher. None at all.
Perhaps you were exempt in view of the fact that you were.
I don't know. Maybe I just don't know. It was something I knew nothing about at all.
Oh, I saw in the local paper that one Horsham woman was imprisoned for refusing to register. It seems that the
I wouldn't know.
The
I didn't
regulations.
Know about that. Well, we maybe I don't know. Perhaps we were given some sort of exemption for we were an odd sort of outfit. This was where Gandhi stayed. You see, in the 1931, when he came over for some sort of a conference. He made a great impression on Bode Gandhi. He had a cell up in the roof there. With he had a gate up there, I think.
Have you read any Gandhi?
No.
You haven't.
No.
You don't feel moved to?
What was the film? See the film? Gives around here, that's me.
It's in the letter. You said there we met many other fellow pacifists. Yeah. Were the people working there actually pacifists, or were they just? Because you see, I mean, Vera Brittain, Sybil Thorndike would have had no reason to be exempted from anything,
no.
That
I think everybody there was a pacifist.
They were.
Yeah.
Why?
There were quite a lot of women, girls, men. I think they were all religious pacifists, if I can remember.
Mm. Was there a strong religious
Yes,
bent to
yes, there was. It was very interdenominational. I mean, we used to start the day every day with prayers, and we used to have this women's meeting and on Sunday services and whatnot, and we all used to be involved in doing it and taking it. Yeah.
Well, these people, well, I don't know about Brockway, for instance, but some of them would have sprung from their religion rather than their... What I find difficult to understand or to reconcile is the fact that churches, particularly in the First World War, supported the war, and even in the Second World War, made no very conscious effort to condemn it.
Yeah.
And yet individuals felt bound to contradict or to go against the tide, if you like, of religion, of organised religion, because in each case they felt it was a just war or a crusade or whichever way they like to look at it. And for you it was the greater evil. But you were a minority.
Odd, isn't it?
I find it a little difficult to understand how a minority can have survived and thrived, obviously, when...
Yes, well, I've just read The Church and the Bomb. Have you read The Church and the Bomb yet?
No, I haven't.
Well, you know, I just cannot understand how anybody reading that can take...